To talk about day three. This is our traditional insider's day, where we just basically go off the rails completely and talk about crazy stuff. The theme for today is future things that don't exist yet and probably may not, but could. And we, you know, this is really us showing you very early on some ideas about what happens after ASP.NET 5 goes RTM in quarter one next year. And then maybe this time next year, some of these things we'll be showing you the first working versions of, okay? So this is really, really early stuff. But I think it's useful for us to, you know, share that with you. And we want to get your feedback about what direction. Some of these obviously would be a very large investment. Others of them are more evolutions of the type of things that we're doing. And then other topics, like I'm talking about performance later on, is kind of spans both what we're doing now and sort of into the future as well. So just wanted to set the scene for today. And with that, we may as well get started.
So. Awesome. So I have a ton of slides to get through. This is going to be kind of quick. Oh, I'm Taylor. I'm Taylor Mullen. Don't mind the N. And those are our Twitter handles. We're both really good at getting back to people if you have any questions.
No, you are. I'm terrible at getting back to people.
Oh, well, I am. If you have any questions, just reach out to us there. And it'll be great. So I've split this talk into like two pieces. We have future of Razor and future of tag helpers. So I thought we'd start with Razor and kind of work our way towards tag helpers. We've had a lot of talk about new Razor directives. So Razor directives as in like at model, at inherits, anything at, and you see like that yellow background, that is a Razor directive. So a few new things which we're thinking of. At include, something where you could take another file and essentially inline it in your page.
Yes, it's ASP Classic all over again. But it's useful sometimes. You want to do this, right?
You do. We wrote a custom version of this for our diagnostics repo, because when you have an error page, if your page doesn't compile, your error page probably just needs to work statically, right? So we didn't want to write this huge error page, so we have things statically included. So we kind of hacked around it and did this. But we'd like to have this to be like first class. That'd be kind of nice. And kind of going on the same thing that Dan brought up yesterday, and I kind of briefly went over, is you have view imports now, which makes it so you stamp your Razor directives onto all of your files. Well, it'd be nice to have more than just underscore view imports, just kind of any view imports, and include them at will.
Right. So the difference here, right, is that include literally inlines the text of one CHTML into another before it gets compiled. So that's easy enough to understand. At import, the thing that you import can't have code. It can just have declarations, you know, declarative statements at the tops, or directives, as we call them in Razor. And they get imported into the top of the Razor that's being compiled because they affect compilation.
Yeah.
But it's a different semantic between including something and then importing a bunch of declarative things at the top, which is why it's a different directive.
Yeah. So. I do want to touch on this one point is, there is a little bit of confusion about Razor directives where, as Damien said, it affects compilation. So if you surrounded like an at import, or in this case, an add tag helper with an if statement, like a C# if statement, it would do nothing. Those things are not C# code. They don't make any difference. Purely by the existence of them being on your page is going to parse differently.
Right. It's kind of like in ASPX, we had the page directive, you know, the thing at the top, and it had a different symbol. It's just that in Razor, we can have more than one directive. You can stack them. And in certain keywords, directives and other keywords aren't. And so that's the difference. You couldn't put the page directive in ASPX inside an if statement, right? It's just a different construct. So we have directives, and this is a way to import them into a file. We have the global one that we now just implicitly support that you can't change, which is view imports. But we'd like to be able to let you import whatever one you like. So
would everyone here, like, would you guys like to have more new cool directives? Do you like directives? Yes? Yes? Okay, a few people. Well, we'd like to let you write your own. So it'd be nice to kind of inject your own greatness into Razor.
Who's written their own directive? You can do this today. Does anyone know how to do this? How do you do it?
You have to extend the page and go through the lifecycle building compiler. It's kind of a mess.
Yeah. So yes, it is a mess. But if I was going to summarize that, it's like you basically have to do your own host.
Yeah.
You have to build your own Razor host. MVC ships with a Razor host. And that's where the at model directive is added, right? At model at the top of your MVC views. But you can't just say, hey, I want to create at Damien, which does stuff at compile time. It's just not a thing. Like, you have to go in and create a whole host, rip out the MVC host, put in your own host to do that. We just want these things to be more extensible. And there's kind of going to be a theme here that Razor is nice, but it's not particularly extensible today. It's kind of a unit. And if you want to be able to take the work we've done and then just add stuff to it or take something out, put something else on, it's a lot of work today. So.
Yeah. I think at model, by the way, like that's a great example of this. That's defined by MVC because it's truly an MVC concept, but it affects like what happens in Razor, right? So you could make your own stuff with that. Anyways. So just in general, Razor extensibility, as Damien mentioned, is severely lacking, and as it was summarized, it is a mess. So we'd like to make it less of a mess. So simple things like...
Say that 5 times fast for me, please.
Less of a mess. parser extensions. So Razor goes through this really complex life cycle. You get your page, think of it like as a big string, turns into some syntax tree. Like if you've worked with Roslyn, very similar. That syntax tree then turns into something that we call a chunk tree. Basically, the bare minimum essential syntax tree to then render code.
It's just chunkier than a syntax tree.
Chunkier than a syntax tree, exactly.
Less nodes.
Less nodes. It's nodey, no. So, add Razor chunk rewriter. This would be kind of nice because what if you just want to add maybe an add tag helper statement, right? Well, we have an add tag helper chunk. You would, in your custom Razor rewriter, you would just add whatever you need to add. You'd represent these things instead of in text, you just have them all in code.
I guess this is, think of this like metaprogramming. So who's ever done metaprogramming of any sort? Okay, there's a hand, two hands, so a little more coming up as people admit to doing metaprogramming, that's good. So this is kind of like doing metaprogramming in Razor. You can get involved in the language of Razor because we can give you the output of parsing before we then go on and compile it. Okay, now it is possible to do this today, but horrible to do this today. We want to make this nicer for people.
Has anyone done that? Like, by the way, like, touch the chunk tree? We have, like, one person. You were a brave soul, man. It's tough. So, I heard another person, actually, today even, talking about an equivalent of, like, a Razor generator. Who here has actually tried to run a random page through Razor? Hands? Okay, a few people. It sucks. It's really difficult to do. It would be nice just to have kind of this default, essentially like command line application that you could just say, oh, here is my Razor page. Can you just parse it for me? Give me back static HTML. They give this being valuable for writing emails, templating them, or really any static HTML.
The other really good use case for this is that we actually do this today. The error page that we ship in ASP.NET 5 that you add via middleware, that's a bunch of HTML, right? Like it spits out, but it doesn't rely on MVC. It's just a little piece of middleware that wants to, in certain cases, show HTML to the client. Well, you know, we're like any developer. We like templating. It's nice to be able to build pages that are based on some type of dynamic stuff, and the error page is no different. And so we wrote Page Generator, which is a tool that lives in a number of the ASP.NET 5 repos, just so that we could build HTML at compile time by using Razor syntax. Okay, now wouldn't it be nice? And then we have other customers who are currently building, or partners who are building middleware, and they say, hey, I want some UI in my middleware, but I don't want to have to depend on MVC. What do I do? And we go, well,
rewrite it yourself.
You do it yourself. Or you can go look at the code that we wrote that's just in some random tool in one of our repos, little page generator thing, and see if that works for you. We'd like to maybe first class that concept a little more. So that if you just have very basic needs to take a somewhat standard looking Razor file and get out a C# assembly, essentially, on the other side, so that in your middleware you can just say render and pass in the class that was derived from your Razor file, that would be, is that useful? Does anyone think that would be useful? Like they want to build middleware, show HTML, but not use MVC, okay? So that's good, right?
Awesome. Yeah, I was so curious about that one, I wasn't sure. Hosts, we've mentioned like a lot. Oh, question?
I guess just thinking about that, I mean, it makes no sense, but that is, does sound a bit like Roslyn, sort of.
The question was, that sounds really Roslyn, yeah, it's definitely.
So I guess the comment here is it worth making it follow a pattern like Roslyn? I mean, it is in a lot of ways. I mean, Roslyn obviously is the C# compiler as a service, and so it lets you, and it's pluggable, so you can extend the C# compilation. Razor is just another language. It happens to use C# as part of its templating. So we have our own pipeline, but ultimately we use Roslyn to do compilation.
Essentially, that at some point will output just a big string that is your code, right? And that big string is then given to Roslyn saying, can you make this runnable?
Yeah.
So hosts, Damien has mentioned several times, hosts today is the only way to really extend Razor. And we don't like that, but there is definitely a use case for it. A great example of this is, say, Nancy. Like, they have their own host. They've rewritten, like, a ton of Razor, and it's unfortunate that the tooling side of things doesn't really work well. So it'd be nice to have, like, a first-class way to replace your host and have it be fully supported throughout the stack.
Right. So, for example, I could create an ESP.NET 5 application in Visual Studio. I could say, I'm not going to use MVC. I want to use Nancy or whatever other ESP.NET-esque or .NET web-esque framework I want to use, and it uses Razor, and it implements a custom Razor host. Or maybe it's not going that far, but I've pulled in one of these email Razor generator packages, and I want to be able to edit my CSHTML files in Visual Studio when they're being used to generate email, which means they're using a different host, which may have different primitives and intrinsics, maybe different at blahs at the top that let me do more email type things. They mean nothing to the editor in Visual Studio because the editor in Visual Studio assumes you're using the MVC Razor host. Right? It doesn't know about any other host. It's like, oh, it's Razor. It must be MVC. I'm going to give you all the MVC IntelliSense. So this is about making custom hosts pluggable all the way through to the editor. So that when you open up a file, imagine in the editor in the top, you'd have a third dropdown, which is, oh, we detected three Razor hosts in your project because you pulled in two other NuGet packages. Which one is this? Oh, the email host. Great. Now I'm getting IntelliSense based on the actual email Razor host that I pulled into my project. Yep. This has been like a pet thing that we've wanted to do for a long time. It is not cheap. It's actually really difficult for us to make this work. So we're looking to you to give us feedback on whether you think that's something we should invest in and whether we think that will have some profound impact on the wider .NET community if we do that, because it is costly, but I think it would be amazing if we could do that. Is that a question or a vote?
No, the question and a vote.
Okay. They use different editors.
Yeah.
So like the kind of, it's not, I don't think of it in any way as doing this and having that be like a zero sum game against what happens with the old Razor stuff.
No, my question is that I use an alternative framework for, instead of
MVC. Oh, in ESP.NET 4?
Yes.
And you want to have like, so basically the question is, would we consider doing Razor 4, which is the new Razor, running in old ASP.NET?
Mm.
So multiple answers to that question. Razor as an engine already runs on .NET 4.5. So the newest version of Razor does run on .NET 4.5.
That's Visual Studio uses.
Right.
Yeah.
But the problem, as we've outlined, is that most of what many people consider to be Razor is actually in the MVC host. It's not in Razor itself.
Layouts.
And that model. Gets onto the next point here, which is we would like to take more of those primitives, those composition primitives that people think of when they think of Razor, and push them down a layer, out of MVC. Things like layouts and partials and blah, 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 all those type of things. So that if you're building a Nancy host or you want to have an alternate Razor story, but it still has layout and those type of imports and those type of things, that would just be part of Razor runtime. That would just be a thing that you get if you use Razor. And that would work on .NET 4.5.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, as always, we generally don't do stuff unless we can make it work in the tooling.
Yeah.
That's both a blessing and a curse, because if you were to look at the cost, doing stuff at runtime is practically free compared to how much it costs to get it to work in Visual Studio the way that we want it to. Like, this is infinitely expensive compared to what we can put good devs on making, you know, I can put Taylor in a room for 2 days and he can spit out all these features. And then it will take us 6 months to get the Visual Studio experience up to scratch, because that's how much it costs to build good tools. I mean, you know that, right? It's really hard. That's why Visual Studio kind of stands alone as that type of experience.
Tooling is not easy.
So, there's a question here, yes.
Side without running with MVC without reading everything else. I'm being more and more interested with static site generations, the kind of thing that is very fun, and Razor is super powerful.
Yep.
And it would be super fun to harness that to generate, for example, my own version of Jekyll.
Okay.
To get my blood running or something like that without actually running the whole
stack,
which is, makes absolutely no sense.
So the comment was, Razor's great. I'd like to be able to use Razor in more places, like in static site generation, without having to incur the cost of all MVC. I'm very happy that you say that, because the second half of this talk, you might be happy with some of the ideas that we have for web pages.
Answer is yes.
Yeah. Taking out the custom stuff that currently is just baked into MVC and making that a more generic Razor stuff so that Razor maybe could be reused in more places other than MVC and you still get most of the benefit.
And we've done some of this stuff. Like if you saw Dan's talk with API stuff, there is now like an MVC core. So we've already done some of the work to split these things out, but we just want to do it more.
Yeah.
So this obviously then goes in line with Razor tooling, as Damien says. Runtime feature A then requires tooling feature A. So refactoring today is not the best with Razor. You have to have your CSHTML files open. So in the very top example here, that would not work unless I had that Razor file open at the time of that refactoring. So that sucks. We want to change that.
Basically, refactoring doesn't work in Razor. I mean, let's just face it. Like, the easy way to say is that no one keeps all their Razor files open, right, when they're in Visual Studio, obviously. So refactoring doesn't work.
Yeah,
like, we would like to make refactoring work.
Yep.
So that if I rename something in C# or a controller or a view model, it flows through all the code that I have in my Razor file. I mean, like, we all want that, right? I mean, why have Visual Studio if you're not going to get that power?
Good idea.
What?
Good idea. Oh, what if we made like a partial, like refactor, like instead of method, refactor to partial? That'd be cool.
Well, we talked about that too. Didn't we have that? We did it in WebForms. We said we can now select a bunch of stuff from the old WebForms editor and say extract user control.
That'd be so cool.
That'd be nice. Extract partial.
Yeah.
Like you could select stuff in a Razor view and then say extract partial and it would create the partial file. And then where you'd started from, it would add like a call to html.partial. Like those type of tools, we really want to be able to do some work on.
This is what happens when you do these talks. We
come up with
we
ideas.
We kind of derail, and it's like 2 hours later, like, wait, we got to talk about the talk now.
Yeah.
All right. So light bulbs. I don't remember who, like, I have not used MVC5 in a long time, but I swear I've seen someone be able to have a light bulb on including a using statement. Does that work in MVC5 or is that ReSharper?
It's ReSharper, right?
Thank you. Okay. I had to double check that. I didn't think it did. Definitely not in MVC6. But that would be great to work.
It's super annoying right now.
Yeah.
Like doing the symbol resolution where you consume something first in a Razor file, then you have to add a using statement. You just, the control dot's not there. It just doesn't work, which is really annoying. So I'd love to get that fixed.
Who here has tried putting a breakpoint in a Razor page? Wow, a lot more than I thought.
I just don't do that. But
I
don't write apps
for
a living anymore. So.
I think it's great and it's awesome. Who here has tried to hover on stuff when you did it? Yeah, it doesn't work.
No debug visualizers in Razor.
So it probably valuable to have that work. Yeah.
Anything else that we're missing? Like what else in Razor tooling? When you think of tooling, I think it's in the editor. When you're in the Razor editor, what sucks right now? What should we fix? Is formatting good? Is formatting getting better? People happy with the formatting now?
Yeah, I was expecting an answer on that.
It's getting better? It could still get better? Or is it like, it's pretty good now, we should stop and we should work on something else?
Okay. 2015, yeah.
Okay.
Good question over there.
I set it to tabs.
Yeah, tabs is. So I think. Yeah. So I think up until 2015, like we just flat out didn't support tabs in the Razor editor.
Yep.
Like if you tried to use them, horrible things would happen. And then I think they tried to make a surgical fix in the latest editor.
We've tried.
To support tabs better.
I made it.
But I haven't tried it. I'm not really sure how good it is.
I haven't tried it myself either. We basically never use tabs internally. So I can't say I've tried it all that much.
How many people use tabs in Razor? Two.
Okay.
And this is why we don't fix it, because that's not a cheap item. It's actually really complicated to fix that because of the fact it's 4-5 languages being projected into a Razor file.
Try it in MVC6 if you don't mind and like tweet me or something, tell me if it works. Because I did a change a long while back to try and fix that. And we even have tests that validate some of the stuff at runtime. So,
but it's good to hear that. Like, I don't usually hear people. Yes?
Is Razor going to stick with C#?
Yes, Razor will be C# exclusively moving forward.
CSHTML.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that the VB Razor thing never really worked very well.
It's not going to get its own language.
No. It will never get its own language. I mean, if you really distill down, like, what is the point in templating languages and view engines in general? They're opinionated. They represent themselves by having a few unique traits. So Spark had, you know, was very unique in the way it did stuff. It was pretty much all markup, right? And then everything that you declared in markup was projected into the same scope, and it was all code generation based. It was really, it was very different to how Razor templating works. It was pure code generation. Razor is all about seamless transitions from HTML to C#. That's its thing, right? Whereas ASPX was Bumblebee start, Bumblebee end, and all those type of things, binding, and all this type of stuff that was baked into the ASPX templating language. And it was parsed using regex. Whereas Razor is all about this nice seamless transition, which is why tag helpers came out the way they did. Like, tag helpers, it was like, well, if we just take that idea of seamless transition from HTML to C#, if we know enough about what you're invoking, we shouldn't even need you to put the at there. Like, that's as seamless as we can get. If I say ASP-4 equals quotation, I know it's C#. Like, I know, because it's a tag helper, so we don't require you to put the at there. So I don't expect to see Razor change drastically other than just refining that point, which is it's about nice seamless transitions between code and markup.
If you, I guess if you wanted to like make somewhat language-ish features for Razor, like the directives is a good way to do that.
I mean, directives let you emit different code, and so you can build very powerful constructs with directives, but it's hard right now.
So we did wait for the other feature that we mentioned.
Anything else, tooling-wise specifically? Anything in the editor that really bugs people still? Yeah?
I don't know if this is really relevant to what you're talking about.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
I think the Seahawks will make the playoffs this year. Is that what you're going to do? Oh, okay.
Exactly. Something that bugs me all the time is when I go into a block, let's say effort and if statement,
yep,
Razor, and then try to use Emmet to code complete out, like say a span or something, Zen coding, you know?
Okay.
It doesn't work, it thinks it's C#.
So Zen coding issue with Razor Editor?
Because the transition hasn't happened yet.
The question was, Zen coding doesn't work in Razor Editor, why?
So, yeah, but
it works most of the time, it's just when it thinks it's C#.
Yeah.
Got it.
So that's actually a side effect of what makes Razor Razor, which is this seamless transition from C# to HTML back again. If you're in C# and you haven't written the HTML yet, we don't know you're going to write HTML, right? Yeah. So maybe if you could invoke a keystroke, I mean, with that, if there was a gest, you could do like control shift blah, and then I would put it in HTML mode so that the IntelliSense flipped over so that you could then do the Zen coding and then complete, maybe. Yeah, because the problem is right now, we have to do all these tricks in design time in the editor that don't happen at runtime. To understand where the carrot is right now, we have to make a guess sometimes as to whether we think you're going to write HTML or C#.
It's almost always.
And then sometimes we don't know until you write something.
It's crazy, right? So you're typing, and you're typing, and you're typing. And there are literally pieces in Razor where it says, I think it's C#. I think it's HTML. As well, once the user stops writing,
and then we see
really
a character, and we go, nope, wrong.
Yeah.
Back out. So, it's actually C#, right? It's not HTML. And we have to reparse. Yeah, okay, so.
File an issue.
I would love to fix that.
ASP.NET/tooling/issues. File an issue there, and
we could
see
look
if
at
they
that.
Can look into that.
In an ideal world, we only have tag helpers. We are every time in HTML.
So he said, the comment was, in the ideal world, you only have tag helpers. It means you're always in HTML.
I like this.
Personally, so that comes up, and as the guy who kind of was responsible for designing tag helpers, like that, people think that that's where I want to go. I actually don't want to go there. Like, I don't want Razor to turn into Spark. That's what that would mean, effectively, if you look at it. You can do that, to be clear. You can build a tag helper that, especially once we show you the future ideas for tag helpers soon,
you can do anything.
You'll be able to do anything. And if people want to do that in their apps, they can. But I don't think you'll see us turn Razor into that.
There's
to a pure marker, effectively into XAML.
Yeah.
Right? I don't think I think Razor at its core will always be C# HTML, C# HTML. Yeah.
That's like the definition. That is like Razor's definition.
But if we're wrong, then people will be able to use all the great new extensibility features to build an alternate universe on top of the existing Razor. And then if it's great, then we'll end up doing that.
All right.
Great. That's a good segue.
Yeah, this is awesome. Future tag helpers, my favorite.
Can I ask people's, I mean, this is obviously a loaded question, but I'd like to understand people's journey with tag helpers. Because I think when I've shown tag helpers to people over the last 2 years, there's been the type of people who have gone, yes, that's amazing, I love it. Then there's the people who go, what on earth are you doing to Razor? That's terrible. And then of those people, some of them over time finally go, ah, I get it now. I saw one thing that got me there. And then I imagine there's other people who still aren't talking to me who think it's terrible and they're never going to use it. And that's fine. But I'd like to understand what the spread is. Yes.
Blogging a lot about tag helpers, and I get kind of that split reaction. There's like this knee-jerk reaction
messing
with it. And then some people are like, yeah, that makes the code a lot cleaner. But what really surprised me is I did a talk at CodeCamp New York, and it was all about tag helpers. And I showed them, like, I did kind of the register page and just converted it over to tag helpers.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's powerful.
So I guess the point here was that this gentleman had done a lot of talks on tag helpers, on blogging on tag helpers, and would usually get those two responses. People who were like visceral, oh my God, that's horrible. And other people who were like, yeah, I get it. And but I think he had the same experience that we've had when we give talks, is when you show like the register page, which are a bunch of forms with a dot at HTML, blah, HTML, blah, and you show that side by side with the exact same thing with tag helpers. That seems to be the killer scenario for a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's like, it's so much cleaner.
I feel like even typing it, like, start typing it compared to its...
I find that much easier to type. Especially when you start using things like Bootstrap and you want to put classes on those things as well.
Yeah.
So it's when you're actually showing it and they see the tooling light up.
Right.
Yeah.
IntelliSense, that's when
it makes sense.
Okay. So when the tooling lights up, people tend to get it. I think this hand up here was... Oh, Javier, yeah.
So last weekend I was doing my ASP.NET 5 talk.
Yep. Yep.
Someone clicks on or something else,
yep.
And I told the groups, like, guys, it's a slippery slope to web controls.
Yes. Yeah.
Was it a web forms, like?
It was dev intersection.
Like, oh, okay, well, there you go, yeah. That would actually make sense, yeah.
An entire view of all of it, and that was a big question. I was like, okay, how do I do these things? And because they wanted to recreate that
yep.
experience, and I told them, like, well, so use jQuery, use
Angular. Right.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we should, right? Just because of now we're just changing one type of markup, using C# to spread a bunch of strings that we can just do on Razor itself.
So the comment was, when showing this to certain audiences, the immediate place that audiences go to is, well, how do I handle events? Because they see this type of markup and they assume it's like web forms or XAML. And I've had that too, and I've found that rather than I certainly don't think that means that we shouldn't do it. I think there's obviously value in the way that we're doing it. I mean, based on the previous comment, for example. I think that's just a question of framing. Yeah. And I believe that you just need to make it very clear that these aren't web controls. And when you show them how to write a tag helper, it becomes abundantly clear these aren't web controls, right? These really are just way to have C# code and maybe more than one set of C# code party on HTML before it comes out. And it's about developer productivity in the editor. So. Yep.
Tag helper, I assume, was like Steve yesterday.
Yeah.
The notes, like that to me was just eye opening. Just because, like, yeah, right. We need to show more of that.
Right. So the comment was the best demo that Javier had seen so far was when Sanderson yesterday basically was essentially a Spar app, but was doing its initial sort of scaffolding of just the layout HTML in Razor, and was able to use a tag helper to suddenly turn it into a server rendered Spar app, because in one very simple step, you could sort of run it through the entire Razor pipeline and do all this crazy stuff. Yeah, so that's a good point. I think I take away from that tag helpers can be used for lots of different things, and I think those different things will resonate with different people and different audiences. And so I think for the form thing that resonates with lots of people who perhaps live in their server-side rendering doing forms with HTML, for people who may be doing other types of things, different demos, like the script demo and the environment tag and the cache tag, which have nothing to do with forms and things like that, they resonate for people as well, I think. Whereas like if you think about what you have to write today to have a script tag that loads jQuery from a CDN but then falls back to testing and then you're loading it from a local thing instead, you show them that and then do the same with CSS and then show them that you can change whether what happens in production versus what happens in development all just by layering tag helpers. That resonates with a certain type of person
as well.
You can
even implement brand new features. Like there is an integrity feature that is being proposed and you can even implement that entirely with tag helpers, which essentially says, if the image I'm trying to load isn't really my image, don't load it. So yeah. You can do that stuff with tag helpers.
And with some of the things we're going to show you after we get past the title slide, hopefully we'll sort of extend your mind into what is possible with tag helpers once we add more low-level features as well. Scott?
Do you think the problem with tag helpers is that the elevator speech is too long? Like, you can't just explain it in, like, two or three sentences?
You have to use it.
So the comment is perhaps one of the problems with tag helpers is that the elevator speech is too long. It's kind of hard to pitch without showing people.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a problem per se. I think that's a problem or that's a trait that a lot of developer technologies have. It's very difficult unless you can show people the way you currently do now, and they don't necessarily think there's things wrong with it because they're used to it, and then show maybe this is a better way, and you can show that in 15 seconds, I mean, maybe that's the, I don't know. Like, for me, that seems to work with the tag helper demos.
Maybe if there was a before and after picture.
Yeah.
So in your face.
Yeah.
We could use it on the website.
Yeah, for sure.
That's why I always start off with, like, the login old and the login dot whatever in the template, right? Because it's blatant what is one of those
graphics with a splitter in the middle.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so the point is maybe if we had one of those graphics where you have, like, one image and then there's a slider and a splitter and you can show it left to right and see the difference between the same output from the different input, you know, using HTML helpers versus tag helpers, maybe that would help.
Should definitely do that. Things. Yeah.
I'll do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you guys thought of renaming this?
Have we thought of renaming it? No, and it's too late for that, but that's funny.
Razor. The why I'm asking that, because we have come from HTML helper.
Yeah.
So yeah. Razor HTML tag form helpers?
This is not a helper. This is a tag. Very custom tag. So why not call it a
tag? It's not necessarily a custom tag, though.
Tag processor?
It's more, I mean, you could say it's a tag processor.
Yeah.
But, I mean, at that point, are we arguing semantics? Like, we could just throw in synonyms for the word helper and...
I'm hearing him say that helper is now a burned word.
I mean, I guess that's two sides of the same coin. Like, we looked at helper and said we already have a thing called HTML helpers, which are method-based. Why don't we have the same... Because in my mind, they're the same concept. I want to write a small thing that's simple that I can use to help me compose views. We have HTML helpers that are method-based, which just... They just return HTML. It's just a string. They generally return iHTML or HTML string.
Yep.
How about we have the same concept of a helper, but it operates on a tag? That's like the unit of construct of a tag helper. That's where the name came from. We haven't really thought about changing it, and frankly, it's probably a bit late now.
Yeah.
I don't think we can survive going through another complete code rename, unless there's like a massive benefit. But
I'm not talking about renaming the class level or whatever you have, the code level.
The concept level?
Maybe. Yeah.
Maybe. Maybe. Maybe.
I mean,
that's interesting.
Me,
yeah.
I come from the Razor world.
Yep.
Helper is a method.
Yeah.
It does get into
that. Yeah.
There's stuff like polymer that have.
See, it's kind of iffy, right? Because then what? You start searching Google for like tutorials, then it's like this mixed thing. It gets difficult, right?
Yeah. One more, then I want to show the actual stuff that we've got planned. Okay. Yeah. Yep.
Stuff smoother, more than building components.
Yeah.
So, we want it to be a place of building components and having tags that don't really have semantic meaning for developers anyway.
Yep. And that I guess tag helpers, I don't want people to think of them as they're this thing. They're like their components, or they're really a construct in Razor that you can use to build custom elements if you want, or you can use them to augment processing of existing elements, or you can use them to build some DSL or whatever. Like, they're really a Razor feature rather than web controls, which were you build a component and you invoke it, right? And it's part of the component model of the web control. So that's how I sort of differentiate that. So I kind of agree, but yeah.
Markdown helpers in about 10 line of codes.
Yeah.
Basically, which is 10 line of codes is basically a helper.
Yeah.
For those who saw the markdown helper, by the way, that I did, the markdown tag helper, common mark, right? Is that what you said? Common mark instead of the thing I used, which is like markdown sharp, core CLR supported and awesome and great. I think we should probably move.
Well, and also just to harp on that again, it's like one of the other ones I wrote was a script inlining tag helper so that I could put inline equals true on any script tag, and then it would just take the source. If I had a source equals foo.js, that would just get inlined into the page, and that tag helper is like 5 lines of code.
Yeah,
but really useful, right?
For me, helpers are supposed to be like snippets
that
you're going to be using, and the work you did with integrating with the IntelliSense and everything else, I at first was expecting something that would be like 6 classes and that would include, you know, as soon as you deal with IntelliSense, we are kind of used to that. That's not going to be simple. This is simple as hell.
Yeah.
And
I'm glad to hear that.
I was not sold last
year,
but this year I'm way more sold.
So just to wrap up that comment for people on the stream, the comment really is the fact that it was so simple and that we got the tooling to work while keeping it so simple helped sell it to you.
Yeah.
And we did work really hard on making the tooling work without you having to write a whole bunch of classes.
For every tooling issue you'll have, there's usually some sort of tag helper attribute alternative.
We've got 12 minutes. I really want to show this stuff.
All right, so this is freaking awesome. I wanted to do this from the get-go, and then I realized that my eyes were too big. And
it'd be too hard.
Yeah, I didn't have enough time. So having like a subset of CSS selectors, right? So this case is saying I have a custom tag with a required attribute. This would be equivalent to the HTML target element, custom tag name, comma, attributes equals required, right? So they wouldn't go away. Like, all those little C-sharp goodness would be great if that's what you're familiar with, that's what you wanted to do. But the CSS subselector would be another alternative.
Makes sense. It's just using CSS selectors to target. Yeah. Oh, wow. Slow clap. Ooh. Beautiful. Beautiful.
And even more, like, we have to define what these subselectors are.
Yeah, we can't do everything. Let's be clear. Like, we don't have an HTML DOM in Razor, so we can only do certain things. But maybe things like that.
Say a grid where the row child and so forth. Does that make sense? Yes?
The second one there, that's being asked for as a feature right now. Just ignore the fact it's a CSS selector, but people want to be able to say, I want my tag helper only to run on the row element when it is underneath a child element that is also a tag helper of this type, like my parent element or whatever, right? And so that selector, we've taken grid.grid tag helper. The grid tag helper is a class name, a C-sharp class name in that case. Yes.
If you did that, it'd be cool to have a tooltip that told you why it was firing there, because I could see myself running around in Razor wondering.
So it's funny you say that. The comment was, it'd be nice in Razor if we did this. I have a tooltip, so in the markup, so I would know we already have that.
Yeah, that's right.
If you hover over all the elements in the Razor markup, it tells you if tag helpers are running on any of them and which class they are.
All right. Good.
Yeah. What we don't have right now, which is one of the other features we wanted to talk about, was navigation. I want to be able to put my cursor on ASP-4 or my own custom tag helper, hit F12, and have it go to the code for the tag helper, right? Like, that would be nice. We don't have that right now. See, you can hover over and it shows you the...
Well, it shows you when it's firing, but not why.
The name of the controller.
Oh, why.
It doesn't show you why.
Why that I'm concerned
about. Okay.
It's like, why is row lighting up here? Or if I type row, why is it not lighting up?
I see.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a
lot of information. Yeah,
I'm
we could.
You could find yourself wanting to understand why it won't fire.
Yeah. Okay.
I see. Sure.
So you basically there was a website called selector or something in the past where you would type in a CSS selector and then it would give you in plain English what it meant. That's a different one, but that's basically the same thing, I'm sure. I think that's what you mean. Like, you could hover over in something, and then in plain English, it would tell you, why is this tag helper running? Because you're a child of this tag helper, and blah, blah, blah.
In plain English, just put that string that you have in target.
Yeah, fair enough.
Oh,
yeah, that could work.
That
we just put the string there. Okay.
Interesting.
Good idea.
Cool. Okay.
So when we end up doing this idea, we'll put the tooling feature in.
Okay, generic tag helpers. This is you, man. Go for it.
Oh! So right now, you can't build tag helpers that are generic, right? Like, you can't build web controls that are generic, because my God, that's hard. But we think we have a way that we could make this work. So that, for example, the way that you invoke it from the markup is identical. Like, nothing changes. You don't have to give us the type. We would just infer it from the arguments that you pass in. So in this case, bindable, which is bindable of T, would have the T model closed over as a person, because that's how I invoked it. And then I could have a second bindable immediately underneath of it, where a person was some other object, right? We would just do this with magic parsing and runtime generic type reflection generation, right? But effectively, it would then let you have generic tag helpers such that in your process method, you could call generic methods that require you have a generic type, okay? Has anyone written a tag helper and gone, gee, I wish I could have a generic tag helper so I could reuse it for different things? No, no one yet? Okay, when you start getting, if you start getting into wanting to do more model-based tag helpers, where you're trying to act on the model of the view, this, I think, becomes really powerful. Today, we kind of cheat. We wanted to say, I don't want you to have to think about generics when doing the most basic things in tag helpers, like model binding. So we sort of hid it all from you in a thing called a model expression. But there are cases where you're going to want to deal with generic types, and so this is the idea here. Yes? Well, not real. Maybe. I mean, it's just C#, right? At the end of the day, what it comes down to is tag helpers let you pass in any object to their attributes, and they get bound to the properties. But today, the types of those properties have to be concrete. That's all. And this is just saying, well, why not? Razor is about C# and HTML working together. One of the great features of C# is generics. Why can't I just have this be generic and have the type inferred by what I pass in when I invoke it? Okay. It's just about making, if there's no value, then there's no value, but this is a C# feature, so we wanted to enable it in Razor because Razor's about C#. Yes?
Well, I thought MVC was just about bringing C# out of the cubes.
You thought MVC? No, not at all. MVC, MVC is not about pulling the .NET language out of your views. It may be about pulling out business logic, but view composition is still logic, and flow is still logic. Like, rendering still requires logic. Razor didn't invent a new templating language to do that. It's still C#. Yep. It is fundamentally C#, and that will never change. If you want something else, there are other view engines that don't use C#, that have their own templating language to do things, but Razor is still C#.
One issue I could see with this would be, what happens if the model does not match the one I'm providing the tag helpers with?
You get an error.
Would you render bindable tag in HTML? Yes.
No, you would get a compilation error, because Razor is C#. So you would get it in the editor, you'd get a big red squiggly underneath new person if you had put, for example, a generic type restriction on T-model. So T-model, where T-model is blah, 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 and then you tried to pass in that something, you would get, it would be just like trying to invoke a generic method and passing in an object that doesn't match the generic restriction. It's just C#.
Cool.
Okay.
Yeah. So one of the things we're really cognizant about here is that with web forms, all the magic between what went into attributes in HTML and what was put in C# was all done through the component model namespace and type converters, right? It was never one-to-one. It ran through the type converter pipeline. None of that exists here. It's just C#. Like, you are literally assigning new person to the model property. That's what's happening. There's no interim step, which is very powerful, but we need to choose what language features we want to sort of light up and magically bind to.
Is this working? Yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah.
I think that was like the greatest segue.
Okay.
Good. If I remember correctly.
Oh, yeah. So this is another one that I want.
Yeah, so this is pretty cool. So the example here is that you want to take in different variations of the same attribute, and it just works. Right? So you can pass in a time span, you can pass in an integer, and it's all typed, it's all error-based. Like, if you type something wrong, you will still get an error. And there is no conversion model like you had in web forms. It is just...
Can I explain the problem?
Yeah.
Because
I have the next slide actually have how you do it, but go ahead.
Well, okay, so the problem, I logged this issue a long time ago, because when we were building the cache tag helper, I found myself wanting to be able to say, expires equals, and then just pass in anything. Time span, a number, a date time, whatever, right?
Yeah.
This is a good example too, like something called a stopwatch, where you just want to have an HTML attribute that is multi-type, and then have it bind to the right property based on the type. Right now, what you have to do is create different attributes. So the cache tag helper has like 7 attributes to do with expiration. Expires on, expires after, expires for, expires when, right? Because they're all different types. I just want to be able to say, here's 4 properties in my C# class that are different types, but in the HTML, just have one attribute and then bind to the right one based on the type of the value that was passed in. It's C#. It's C# method overloading.
Hey, I'm sure.
Right? This is why you do overloads in C#, right? Same method name, different signatures, and then you just call the right one. And so this is what it would actually generate? Or this is how you write it in your tag helper?
Yeah, so this is like, think of like the code generation side of this, right? Like what Razor would actually output to make this even possible. It's just C#.
It's just C#.
So yeah, you pass in tenable, calls the int overload, you pass in time span dot whatever, does the time span overload.
The other thing here is you're basically getting IntelliSense for free. Because in the editor, what you'll get is when you go into, what was it, countdown equals, it's just method overloading syntax. Like you'll actually show you have 2 overloads here, and it'll tell you can either pass in an int or you can pass in a time span. It's as simple as that. I think he was first, sorry, yes? No. So the question is, does it support type converters? No. Type converters are part of the component model system. And as I said before, it's nothing to do with component model. This is code generation. And so what you end up doing is just, we lift the little C# expression out of the HTML attribute, and we put that on the right-hand side of effectively either a method call, in this case, or a direct property assignment. It's nothing magic. It is just C#.
Yep.
The question is, what about model binders? Model binding doesn't happen in the views. Model binding happens in action invocation.
I think the problem is how to detect which property is set. So
they
may combine variables.
Yep, so the question is how to detect which property is set. Yeah, you have to design that into the tag helper.
Yep.
Just like you would if you were building a component in Angular and directives, the same sort of problem. Generally, you would have to make your properties nullable if they're primitives. Right, instead of being reference types, so that you could determine which one is currently set. Yeah, absolutely, that would be a problem. Now, today, it's no different. The cache tag helper, we just have 7 properties, and the cache tag helper has to figure out which one is set.
Yeah.
And if you set 2 of them,
and they're null.
We have to like go, well, which one do we use? Because if you set expires on and expires after, which one do we use? Because they're sort of semantically different. Whereas if it was just one attribute, we wouldn't have that problem.
Which comes to my point, verification.
Verification?
Is this possible?
Yeah.
That's under the tag helper, right?
So yeah. Verification themselves?
Yes.
If it's possible with the
and
attribute.
Yeah, verification of within the scope of a tag helper being invoked. There's stuff that we can do statically based on what you declare in the tag helper, and then the stuff the tag helper has to do at runtime. If you look at the source code for our tag helpers, you'll see that combination. There are certain things that we can do very easily declaratively, like did you supply the required arguments for it to even be a tag helper? But if it gets parsed as a tag helper and we invoke it, it's up to the tag helper to decide if all the data is there that it needs in order to actually be invoked. Now we have some helper classes that we wrote, like in the script tag helper. And
that's a bad example.
Maybe the script tag helper?
Script one? Okay. Yeah.
And there zoom in, zoom in, zoom in. Scroll down. Scroll down. See that we declare all these constants. And then if you scroll down, so the top thing, the parser, from lines 25 to 32, the parser can verify all that. Like you'll just get an error if you do the wrong thing, or we won't even invoke it as a tag helper. It doesn't light up. But then if you go here, stop, go up there. See mode attribute line 45, mode details. That is code that this tag helper is doing to figure out what mode it was invoked in, what attributes were set, and what operation should I perform. And that all uses that's basically the declaration.
Runtime or design?
This is all runtime. Everything here is runtime. The attributes are design time because they're just, the attributes are design time. So that's what I'm trying to explain is that there is some run. Currently, the design time verification can only be declarative. There is no code that we call into in your tag helper at design time because that would require us to like load your assembly and run it at design time. Now, typically, you don't do that on the same type. If we're going to support things like that, which we're actually getting to, you have to have a different type to do that because there's a different set of rules. You can't take dependencies from dependency injection, for example. Generally, those things have to have parameterless constructors or they have to be static so that we can just new them up out of the ether, out of nowhere, and just call them. WebForms was the same way. Control designers were a different thing that you attach to control so you would get design time behavior. Okay, one more. Okay,
cool.
Good.
Great.
Good. Affirmation's okay. Nice.
Tooling improvements. We've done a lot of stuff with tag helpers already, but we can do more. It'd be nice where if you hover over a tag helper and you hit F12, just kind of like how you would with any C# method, that you would actually go to your tag helper. We think that would be great because you it gets a little tricky. We have some problems to solve, like what if more than one tag helper is currently targeting the element. But it'd be nice to have nonetheless, and we could figure that problem out when we get to it. Or even F11, like you're debugging, right? You're stepping through. Well, what the heck is this tag helper doing? It'd be nice to step into it, go into the process.
Which tag helper is being invoked, in which order?
The comment was to figure out which tag helper was being invoked in which order. Yeah, absolutely. Which you then, again, get into some interesting scenarios and multiple tag helpers are on the same element. Because you kind of go through the process method, then you jump out, then go through the next process method, and so forth. But we think that would be really cool.
Yeah. All right, let's go through, because we're already over, and I really want to show the generation.
Tooling improvements included. So right now, we have a whole, like, we just showed the script tag helper, right? There's multiple modes for that. Well, it would be nice in tooling to say, well, this attribute A goes with attribute B, so if I type attribute A, it will autocomplete attribute B for me and let me just move from one thing to the next. Kind of like snippets when you're doing properties and stuff.
Right. So you can basically declare that these two attributes go together and the tooling will help you.
Last starts first, starts last.
The order doesn't matter.
So if you typed in last name, it would actually complete last name for you, right? The question is, would it prevent you from deleting it? Don't know. We could decide how strong. It says hint right now. It's not like meant to be a rule. We could decide to make this really specific and say, this is required. And then that would allow us to light up tooling. Like, this is the classic argument. The more you statically declare, the easier it is for tooling to help you write that code because it knows it's hard and fast rules.
Yeah. Right? Okay, view components. All right, so I was gonna code this out. Who here knows about view components? I'm not gonna do that. I'm not gonna code it today. Okay, so essentially what a view component is today is just some bit of C# that you can invoke from your Razor pages.
A similar pipeline to controllers.
Controllers, exactly. So iAction result, I could return view here, for instance. I could return a string. It worked just how controllers would today. And in all of your Razor pages, without any work, you have @component.invoke, whatever. This is how you invoke your view component, right? So we have a lot of ways how to improve this, but it's a little iffy. None of this is typed. Like these are just objects. So we think tag helpers could be a way to make this better. So in a way to say, okay, well, that's good. Yeah. So the second I have a view component, make it a tag helper. Like, you can invoke it either way. It's not one or the other, but you can invoke it via tag helper, and then these would be typed for you. You get all the properties, you get all the greatness that tag helper offers.
So there's actually a separation in the tag helper system between the tag helper type that runs like at runtime, and then the process of discovering what is presenting itself as a tag helper such that we can generate the code. There's already that separation, kind of similar to that there's a controller factory and a thing that finds controllers, and then what actually invokes it, it's usually the same thing, but it could be different. So Taylor's actually already written this as a proof of concept with a couple of different implementations. He's written a tag helper, what is it?
It's basically, there's one tag helper that is then run for every single view component. So it can kind of take the form of whatever you ask it to.
Tag helper descriptor is the word
I'm looking for. Descriptor.
So we have a tag helper descriptor provider, which provides descriptions of tag helpers by finding all the view components in your system, but actually just ends up running a single tag helper class, right? And passing in all the appropriate context so it can run the right view component. But it looks like the consumer is doing, you know, invoking different tag helpers because they're different elements and stuff. But they're all actually the same tag helper that just runs the right component.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So,
okay.
Yeah. If you're going to show stuff in code, you got to zoom in.
Oh, I'm sorry. Like, okay.
Otherwise, you're just flashing the screen.
See, this is what I get for making my font size big.
Okay.
400 is fun. Jeez. Okay, you guys ready for this?
Yeah.
All right, that's the difference.
You guys will forever know these words.
Now. All right.
All right, so next part. Programmatically adding tag helpers. So this kind of goes in line with view components, because the second you write a view component, it's not a tag helper, right? It'd be nice to say, I want to then add a tag helper, like based on the behalf of the view component. So there's a lot of different ways we could do this. One, just adding a tag helper. Glimpse actually jumps through a whole bunch of hoops to get all their tags included in the page. They have a tag helper, as Anthony said yesterday. Was it yesterday?
Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Anyways, so like adding a Glimpse tag helper, this would be programmatic and it would just work.
Yeah.
Or maybe adding a factory that then creates them. This is where like a view component thing would come in. It would then discover all your view components and then create tag helpers based on their behalf. Or even just doing like an add tag helper, but in code.
Right. Now, this presents some problems, tooling, for example.
Yeah.
Because today tag helpers are statically registered in your application in markup. So tooling can find it. It's easy. Whereas if you do it in your startup class,
yeah.
Tooling doesn't run that, right? We don't run your configure method in Visual Studio because you might talk to a database or something. We can't do that. So this presents issues, right? Yeah. But obviously it's a nice runtime feature, but we're not really sure how it would work in tooling. So it's a bit of a...
That kind of goes into like the whole MVC Razor host thing.
Yeah.
Like if we can get the MVC Razor host thing to work, we can probably get this
Or part. Potentially just have a way for things that are brought in by NuGet to participate in design time. Like they actually declare, I want you to run this when you're in Visual Studio. And and there would be a context passed in, and one of the things you could do was add tag helpers, right? Maybe we'd have to make it that first class for this to really work.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, okay, this is the huge one. So today people ask, why can't I write a tag helper that's like repeat and then have an attribute called items, and then I pass in like an IEnumerable of customer, and then inside the tag helper's body in the CSHTML, I can type at item dot blah, right? People say, why can't I do that? Because tag helpers can't participate in code generation. That item dot has to come from somewhere, right? Someone has to create the item variable, and someone has to assign the current iteration of that item onto the item variable at runtime. Okay, you have to compile the code and emit the code at compile time, and then you have to actually run that code at runtime, like this. Like, why can't I do that? Okay, you cannot do that today in tag helpers. You can get around it by designing a really weird API that your tag helper takes like a context object that is created outside of the tag helper by the page, and then you have like a current item property, and the tag helper can set that current item property every time it runs the child. Horrible, right? But that does work.
Yeah.
So to do it properly, you need to enable tag helpers to participate in code generation. Now, WebForms had this. They were called control builders. Okay, this is how data binding in WebForms worked. You had a grid view, and then there was a grid view control builder that would get given all the code that was generated by the ASPX engine and said, well, here you go. Here's all the code. What do you want to do? Add some methods, add some variables, blah, 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 blah. And that all just worked. Okay, it's not easy code to write, but you can now participate in code generation. This is kind of the glass ceiling in tag helpers today.
Yeah.
This is where you get to the point and say, well, I can't do the thing I want to do because I can't participate in code generation. we want to investigate what it would take to add code generation hooks, what the API would look like. Do we expose Roslyn? Do we create some different interim API? In web forms, we use CodeDOM. There's no CodeDOM anymore in this system. It's all just strings and Roslyn. So
I hacked this together. This is not final.
Yeah, this is like, maybe it would look like this. But again, it would have to be a different type. You can't just put it in the tag helper itself because it runs at a different time.
Yeah.
Okay, so it can't have the same context. It can't have the same dependencies. It has to be able to be newed up while you're compiling rather than when you're running. But this would give you the ability to practically do anything in a tag helper. Like, you could literally start creating your own templating language by way of tag helpers without having to go and, you know, extend Razor itself. So this is one example, the type of things you might be able to do. The canonical one is I just want to be able to have an item property or a model property and then set an item variable that my content can use.
Can we go back?
And then the next, can we go through the picture one?
This one?
Next one. Did that one.
Got you.
So then there's if you take this to like the nth level beyond that, there was a bug that was logged about how can we make the image tag helper support globbing, maybe? So you could say image source equals or ASP-source and give it a glob path and it would execute multiple images. Becomes really interesting when you have to zoom in, dude. Zoom in.
More? Oh my God.
God, like, yeah, we're standing here. Right, scroll down. So look at the picture element, right? So scroll up actually first. Let's show the before. So here's, you know, the picture element that's coming, right? Or is coming in some browsers or lets you do responsive images. Wouldn't it be nice? It has a certain syntax and a certain way of being able to specify the images and the sizes for them and things. Wouldn't it be nice if I could just, if I created all my image files with the right file names, okay, 100, included the metadata of how big they were and those type of things, and then I could just say, hey, point a picture tag at a particular set of images with a globbing path, and then the output HTML could be, you know, something like that. So it finds all the images and then it analyzes them on disk. It looks at their metadata, their MIME types. It extracts their image, you know, their width and their height, all that type of stuff, and emits the right markup. We could do that today. That doesn't require code generation, but look how opinionated that is. Like, you can't change anything about what gets emitted in this case. It's not composable.
Unflexible.
This may as well just be an HTML helper. You can't really change much other than what goes on the picture element. You can add a class, but you can't change what's inside of it, right? From the invocation, the source. If you scroll down, and if we looked at what something with code generation would be able to do, now you could get full control. So the first attribute, ASP source, source set include, you set the globbing path. That gets invoked. So the tag helper goes, oh, right, let me find all the files. Then let me execute the next three attributes, source, source width, and source height, by passing in what I found as a result of executing the first one and attaching an underscore matches variable into that scope so that the person invoking the tag helper can make a decision about what values to put on certain attributes. Okay? You can't build stuff like this without code generation. Now, some of you might be looking at this going, this is crazy, and other people might be looking at this and going, wow, this just enables incredible things that you can't do. So now I get the same output, but when I invoke it, I have full control of what values get assigned to which attributes, okay? Because it's just being generated dynamically. So again, as I said here, it's just a crazy idea, but this is the type of things that we want to be able to enable by supporting code generation in tag helpers. No idea on a timeline. I'd love to be able to do this in like Razor vNext. So after we do ASP.NET 5 and we, you know,
it's probably one of the most requested features.
Yeah, this would be a big item, but it would enable a lot of stuff. Yes.
So in this scenario, what you see is like find the pipeline, right? Because ultimately this is take something to find a pipeline.
So the comment was in this scenario, it's kind of you defining a pipeline. Yeah, I mean, basically, if a tag helper can participate in code generation, it can define its own pipeline.
Yeah.
Yes. So in this case, this one's even quirkier because you have one attribute that is used to set up the first stage, and maybe the second attribute as well. Yeah. But then the next three attributes are used to do after you've executed the first one.
Yeah, they're right? Based off the other attributes.
But this stuff is all possible today in things like web forms because they do code generation, and you can absolutely do this type of stuff.
Yeah.
So I would love to be able to enable this. It requires a lot of thought because I don't want to turn tag helpers into a complex mess, but I do want to enable them to be more powerful. And so this is kind of the next obvious step. Now, we're way over time and I'd love to get on to the next topic. So unless we have any pressing questions.
There is.
That's all code generation stuff. Basically, lots of different uses for code generation.
Okay. Yeah.
Property binding is a really good one.
Well,
but
okay.
It's all code generation.
Good for thought.
Enables to do other stuff.